if you can kill the egg, but what do you do with the eggs when you dispose of them? And you don't grow birds. I think we heard from Mpumalanga again this morning, one of the poultry houses had to close down because one of the issues was that they couldn't get chicks. So if we sit with that scenario, even if it doesn't spread, we're going to have a problem. So what is the... Thank you, Chair. And thank you for the update. I think it's good that we're getting this.
Thank you, Chair. Greetings to the committee and to the department. Chair, I have only one question. From the presentation, it appears to me that provinces that are mainly affected is Mpumalanga and somehow in Johannesburg, which gives an indication to me that some other provinces are fine, and I would want a confirmation on that. And also, what measures do we have in place to make sure that this thing does not spread to other provinces? That's the clarity I want to check.
Okay, Honorable Tlaka.
Thank you, Chair. Just only to one question is on the part of the noise three. There was this one. What was the reason of the Egyptians when they say they made a mistake by vaccination? And then on the part of the effectiveness of the control, the quarantine, whether it is working, and therefore we really hope that it's going to make stop the spread of the outbreaks. And then lastly, the jobs that are being lost. What is the impact there? And what is the response, social response, on this part of the struggle? Thank you.
Are you done? Okay. Welcome, Honorable Mapanga. Let's start by appreciating the response of the department generally. In attending to this outbreak, so far you have managed to contain the spread itself. But my question would be on the, you know, on every situation. You identify opportunity and use the situation turn into positive opportunity. As Honorable Papa was raising questions around the effects of the outbreak. From my side is that department, as this happened, what are the opportunities that we can tap on to manage this thing further and better. yeah, something like that. Can we get response? And sorry, the last one, what is the impact to the human being in terms of consumption and the disease itself? Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, for the questions. Let me start responding to the questions asked by the Chair. On the human side, the fortunate thing is this H5N8 does not affect human beings. And although from an ethical point of view, and then also from a disease spread point of view, the department is encouraging that none of the products, eggs and chickens, live or dead, should be removed from the area of quarantine. To also try and help us in curtailing the spread of the disease per se. Maybe also Chairperson and Honorable Klapa, from the opportunity identification point of view, we have met as a veterinary working group to also see where maybe the animal production colleagues can hop into the whole situation in terms of helping the farms to re-establish, and then also going into the future, how can we improve the biosecurity issues in the farms to avoid future incursions of other diseases. And I want to also emphasize that although we're speaking about the H5N8, which is killing the long-lived birds, it is a big experience for us as a department, because we have, as a country, never experienced this kind of outbreak before. If it was another, maybe H5N2 that is afflicting our ostriches, and then it had gone into our beds, it could have been even a much more dire situation, because I am sure it would even affect the broilers, the layers, and even the breeders themselves. So, Honorable Chair, maybe without claiming to respond properly to the social issues that will need to be looked into, we still have to consult properly in terms of really re-establishing, particularly the small farmers that have been affected, and then to see also how we can help them re-establish. Maybe the CFO and the acting DG will also help me respond to the issues related to the compensation that Honorable Maloyi also asked about. The issue, the complications with vaccinating this bait is we often, after vaccinating them, there is a possibility of either not having the vaccine being sufficiently effective, or creating a situation that is known as endemic stability, meaning that if we have a situation of endemic disease situation, we are establishing the disease in the country. It becomes an additional cost to the producers, that first thing, before they produce, they have to buy avian influenza vaccine. And these vaccines are not very cheap. But the second thing is, in a situation, as I indicated, there is 16 H subtypes, and then also 9 N subtypes. Because we can have a situation where we have an H5N7, which is another disease, and the H5N8 may not be able to be protective against the H5N7, and then it becomes very difficult to pick up the disease in situations like that. In scientific terms, they say that one should be able to differentiate between infected and vaccinated animals, which creates a very big problem from a production point of view, because if it is a mild disease, it's not causing high mortalities, it can spread further and even cause more losses from that point of view. So vaccination might cause a mild disease, which might spread further and cause even more losses. Do people know about where to get help? Fortunately, I can also attest to the fact that fortunately, especially the wild birds in Centurion, the wild birds in Standerton that were provided to us, it was just members of the public that have heard about the outbreaks of avian influenza, and they have collected the samples on our behalf and then submitted them to the nearest state veterinarian, who submitted the samples to the laboratory, and then we ended up with confirmation. Honorable Stein, the last time I checked, throughout the country we had at least 256 state veterinarians, but this year we also supplemented with around 126 community compulsory community service veterinarians who are also helping very much about the management of the disease. I must comment, unfortunately, the MEC is gone. The young man who has been handling, I call him the young man, sorry, Honorable Chair, who is a very young state veterinarian who only qualified last year, and he's the one who has been handling, who handled the Leandra outbreak, and he did a very good job in that regard. From the laying point of view, Honorable Stein, when we did an estimation and then spoke to the South African Poultry Association, they indicated that at least from a table egg point of view, the farms that have been affected, they only contributed 1% of production. But to be very honest, the Standard 10 area and the Vaal area, there is a big concentration of breeder birds there. And up to so far, we have already culled two sites of breeding birds. And if this one that was announced yesterday is true, because we still haven't received the results, that will be the third site. And it is breeder birds. These ones are for broiler chickens. So there is going to be a knock-on effect on the broiler production. I don't remember which member asked about the shortage of chicks. It is true, because in the Standard 10 area, when the first breeder flock was identified as infected, we had to go into a hatchery that was supplied by that breeder flock. And we advised that all the hatching eggs that were in that hatchery be destroyed. So there may not be enough day-old chicks out there to grow out. In the Boksburg farm, there is also a rearing site. We have now completely culled the 120,000 birds that were laying eggs. Now we are going into culling the 243,000 hens that are also producing laying eggs, that are laying eggs. But we have a compartment of the rearing site that we still, we are actually advising that it be culled out. So because we just wanted to protect the compartment from which we are able to export laying eggs and then also laying hens and then also broiler hens. So if that one is culled, it's going to take again another big percentage of growing chickens to be reared for production purposes. There is a question that was asked on provinces. Up to so far, Honourable Member, there is no other province that is infected. But we have requested through our state veterinary system to conduct enough surveillance to ensure that if there is further outbreaks, we arrest them on time. And the concern is there are those areas that we know are actually huge poultry producing areas, some in the Western Cape, some in KwaZulu-Natal. But we have agreed through a veterinary working group that there should be some element of ensuring that if birds are moved from one province to the next, they should have been inspected and they should be a Red Cross movement permit into other provinces. I hope I have responded to many of the issues, except how far are we with the finance. I don't want to implicate my department.
Thank you very much, Dr. Mbisani, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. I think the Chair asked about what are the opportunities that are there to move forward. In this very same house, we had a discussion around looking at how we reignite the poultry industry in South Africa. And I think within that combo of mechanisms that we are bringing together, we can also bring in line the issues that have got to deal with the health aspects within poultry industry. Because the current avian influenza would show that in terms of the outcomes, MTSF outcomes of government, this disease has got an impact in terms of almost five outcomes. Outcome 4 on the economy, outcome 7 on rural development, 11 on international relations, and 2 in terms of health. So we're looking at that to make it part and parcel of how we can assist the poultry industry and secondly to transform the industry. On the issue raised on the compensation, we have written to the DG of National Treasury. We have also followed up with him on the 26th of July in terms of saying we wouldn't wait for him to pronounce in terms of the monies. If we have got to cut, we'll be using reprioritizing within our current funding and ensuring that we will then have to have an unforeseen and unavoidable expenditure claim that would accrue. We have also we are also going to ensure that during the course of the cabinet meeting that will be held, there will also be a cabinet memo from the department that informs cabinet about the outbreak and also the funding that is required. With the outbreaks that were there, bar the one that we had yesterday, probable one, we had requested for 23 million, and that might even go higher based on the current funding expectations that are here. However, I would also indicate that the outbreak that we have had is also showing to almost a blind spot in terms of how we manage our own disaster funding, that we need to be very agile as a department in terms of responding to the issues that were raised by Dr. Mdisan, and we will be engaging with National Treasury also to see how can we utilize this funding without delay, and then coming up with a mechanism on how we claim on that. Thank you very much, Chair. There was also a response that was requested in the number of the chickens, Dr. Mbisa, and on page 14, I think Honorable Stein was asking, let me go to my notes, just a minute. Yes, to say what is the current level in terms of the infections that we are having, and we can confirm that we have got 623,000 hens that have been culled. Thank you. So that slide on 14 reflects at the total, and Honorable Stein, the number of beds, both table and the hatching, that have been culled to date, 813,000. Thank you.
That's the response, Honorable Members. Any follow-up questions? Honorable Pussy, Honorable Member.
Thank you, Chair. This one is just a point of clarity and interest. There is an ordinary chicken disease that is found in domestic chickens in rural areas, which is usually called Newcastle. How relevant it is to this tool that you've just been explaining to the committee chair, and one again to just to find out because how unsafe it is for the communities out there to consume them after having treated them, because they usually buy from the pharmacies those small bottled medication that they use, and in deep rural areas they don't even go for that. They simply use aloe together potassium permanganate just to add into water for the chickens to drink, and then you find that some survive. They don't, not all of them do die, and they continue consuming them. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just a brief one on this. I'm just interested in from the part of breeding, whether it would be possible, or it's something that is avoided, that when there is outbreak in some areas and provinces, is it possible that other farmers in other areas can take advantage of that and you help them intensify the production as to avoid the shortage of white meat? Thank you.
Honourable Speaker, sorry, Chair, it's just a concern that I had, but it's, generally, but now that you've mentioned about the unforeseen, that 23 million that will be unforeseen, the department is not making any budgetary plans for unforeseen things. And I'm just thinking now, Chair, it was mentioned on this, but also the outbreak or possible of further outbreaks or looking after the commander worms and other diseases. Are we not budgeting for anything like that if something happens? And I think it is one of the challenges, Chair, that we need to deal with it, because we are seeing, you know, these kinds of outbreaks not only on crop and other things that's happening, and it's something that it's actually supposed to be budgeted for. So I just don't need to find out if we have a plan for that in going forward. It's every time a discussion, because the response time is usually too late because there's no budget and we first need to make a plan, and then, you know, we're not helping with it. So can I just get a general comment on that?
Did you end there too?
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable Kabekulu asked about the Newcastle disease. It is a completely different virus that is not linked to the avian flu virus. But the difference with Newcastle disease virus is there are quite a number of vaccines that are available that can be used to prevent infection. And then poultry normally develop very good immunity after, even if they can also be exposed and then react naturally, and then some of them may survive during an outbreak and will not be a danger in terms of carrying the virus maybe to future generations. So it is maybe the differences in the viruses themselves that make the viruses different. But the most important thing is Newcastle disease can also kill many chickens all at a go if it finds that the poultry are actually naive to the virus itself. And then there is also a question that came from Honorable Kappa related to intensification. This is, Honorable Member, this is what we are trying to preach to all the poultry producers at this moment, that
seeing that the other producers are having this big challenge, the best would be for the ones that are still not infected at this moment to check up on the biosecurity. However, related to this particular outbreak, what makes it very difficult is the fact that we even have ordinary weavers actually being infected. And that makes it possible for a sparrow, a normal house sparrow, to be infected. And if one goes into chicken houses, it is very difficult to go into a poultry house and find no sparrow in there. So basically, it actually means trying to put even fine nets to prevent the entry of sparrows into the chicken houses, and also closing the doors, basically, to ensure that they don't go in and out. And we are hoping that as soon as the temperatures improve and the cold goes away, the virus will also, if we don't allow it to grow, it will also go away for now. And then we will have to plan better for the next production, for the next winter. I don't know, related to the issue on the unforeseen, I don't know, the CFO will talk. Thank you.
Yes, thanks, Chair. Good afternoon, honorable members. I just want to comment on the statement by Honorable Stein. We do have a budget for mitigation of disasters, but for a reason it is not sufficient. I think for the past 3 years it has been around 65-66 million. But then also what we have done as a department is that we have approached Treasury to give us more budget, especially around Program 2, which is one of our main programs, so that we can improve the biosecurity matters. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the update, and we ask the department to continue to do the good job on this issue. I hope this challenge that we have, it will result in the positive opportunity for our people. Because I could imagine every day we need eggs to eat breakfast. Our children need breakfast with eggs to do it on one of the requirements of the board. So if these issues not attended to and it escalates to other areas, then we are in serious trouble. We want to appreciate the work that has been done, but urge you to monitor. And the good part of is that you are picking up the phone, Honorable Doctor, which is a good sign of good public service. Because some of the people, their phone rings until it goes off. And we appreciate that because that's why the report is positive. Thank you very much. So now, honorable members, go to the fourth quarter performance and expenditure report of the Department of Agriculture, led by the DG. DG?
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members.
we will be presenting a quota for organizational performance for the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries.
Just to indicate one thing, honorable members, there was a letter which was written by the department requesting that on matters of organizational structure and other issues that were raised on APP, they requested to be postponed. I'll circulate the letter from my member. Now I'm saying we've received the letter from the department requesting us to postpone. Do you remember there were outstanding issues? That's why we have passed the agenda for today, because tomorrow we won't have the meeting. Those issues are organogram of the department, development of the action plan to fast-track policy development and legislative review, results of stock recovery plan and abalone and web coast rock lobster, alignment of the quarter and annual performance report of the department with MCFS, outstanding issues from other committee engagement feedback on this one with the Janet draft report on the food nutrition security implementation plan, availability of animal vaccine at OBP, and preservation and development of agricultural land bill. So those are the issues that they've requested us to postpone them. So I'm raising them so that members should not raise questions related to those issues. DG?
Thank you, Chair. On slide 2, we have got an outline in terms of the presentation, and our presentation would then kick off on slide 3 that has got the operational environment that we have, starting with the mission, with the vision, mission, and strategic goals. All the emphasis that we can say is that in terms of food security, we have added the nutrition aspects in terms of the work that we are doing, in line with the work that we are doing with the DPME. The structural arrangements within the department, where we have got 5 core line departments and also having administration program 1. And going through to slide 7, I'm struggling because it's on PDF here. So then we go on to the policy and strategic alignment within the work that we are doing. We take our mandate coming from the National Development Plan, which is our Vision 2030. That has got 6 strategic areas that we are pursuing, starting with improved land administration and ending up with putting up a new land under irrigation. And within that, you have got 2 critical areas. The fast tracking of land reform, where we had set ourselves a target of 2 million hectares by 2019 and having 1 million jobs within the sector. And this very same reflection you will get within the new growth path, where we say within the agro-processing area we will have 145,000 additional jobs and we will create 300,000 new smallholders. These were then coined into the medium-term strategic framework, and the medium-term strategic framework will also encapsulate all the issues that were raised within the NDP as a programmatic action of government to deal with those. And lastly, reflected in terms of outcomes 4, 7, and 10, and also the 9-point plan, and top of that 9-point plan, the revitalization of agriculture and agro-processing value chains as the work that we are going to do. And also the agricultural policy action plan with its 9 prioritized community value chains, and the 6 transversal indicators. Chair, we would like to report today that each and every time that we came here, we would say South Africa has got 14.3 million people who had inadequate and severely inadequate access to food. That figure with the general household survey that we have had has decreased to 13.7 million. We would like to take the portfolio committee through the current system that we are having. The last time around, in terms of the pack that was distributed to the portfolio committee members, honorable members would say on slide 11, we had the current slide that is showing on the slide, but we have distributed an additional copy where we have indicated what is the current population in those provinces that we have given, and I think it's currently being distributed, so that it's quite say that what is the current number of the population per province and against what kind of food inadequacy are we dealing with. We have seen significant changes in terms of the numbers in Gauteng, where you had 308,000 additional people who went into the back bracket of inadequate and severely inadequate access to food, and also almost a similar number, which is quite surprising in terms of Limpopo, where you had 18,000 being added, while we know that Limpopo is still one of those food secure provinces. What we will be doing and requesting from the portfolio committee through you, Honorable Chair, is that we would like, together with our partners, DPME and the Department of Social Development, to come and present this new work that came out of the General Household Survey, so that the portfolio committee can then be taken into confidence in terms of the current statistics that are coming out. Positive in terms of us reducing those with inadequate and severely inadequate access to food, but also concerning in terms of these provinces that are currently on the rise. We also look at the issue around the creating of jobs, where the NDP enjoins us to create 1 million jobs within the sector. We have indicated that one of the areas that we need to do in order to get these jobs is to implement APAP and also strengthen our biosecurity programs, and also looking at market access in general. And if we have got to look at how far we are progressing in terms of MTSF, we also need to make an admission that statistically, Chair, we need to start deal with the issues around statistics. And I'll use this looking at the current way that we have staged this. We are saying that within this MTSF, we need to create 300,000 jobs. In terms of the report that we are having and the report that you also give at the DPME, we currently have got 42,000 jobs that were created within the sector. But if one looks at the current statistics that come from Stats SA, they would give us an indication that while we have 702,000 jobs within the sector at the beginning of the MTSF period, currently we have got 874, which is quite higher than the 42 that is here, meaning that within our own systems we need to then tighten it up so that we reflect a figure that would be very close to those areas. I would also make that admission that this figure that is here excludes the jobs that are there within CASP and ILEMA, but I don't think that those are the only ones, because being one of the people who reports on RAVAC, I know what the current statistics are in terms of the jobs within agriculture, and that those have been validated by Stats SA. On the 1 million hectares of unutilized work, we have moved to cultivate 290,000 hectares. We still have got a massive 709,000 that we still have got to cultivate going forward. And I would also talk to this later on as I present the graphic information in terms of what was identified by the Crop Estimates Committee when the non-commercial areas of work was mapped, because it also signifies that within this area of work, there's still a lot of work to be done in terms of statistically indicating the work that has been done at provincial level, and that has also been done by our farmers. We also set ourselves a target of 80 million smallholder producers supported. We're currently exceeding that a target that we had for ourselves, but this target should not mislead us, because if we have got to look at the current number of smallholders as signified by Stats SA, we have got 171,000 smallholders, and therefore we're almost assisting, if the stats are correct, almost 70% of those who are within the smallholder farmers area. We also doing well in terms of the rehabilitation of land, in terms of our various interventions for land care. We have got almost 49,000 to go over a period of 22 months, and I think that we'll be able to reach that target. And then lastly, looking at the 1.6 million households that would benefit from the food security and nutrition initiatives, we were looking at 702. We are currently at 702 and still have got to go to 897. This area would need to be fast-tracked within the next few months. And this is an MTSF outlook, Chair and honorable members. In terms of the department, on the validated information that came, the department has achieved 79% of the targeted outputs that we have had. So it's 79%. And on the right-hand side, we have got an outlook in terms of how different branches within the department performed, and I will not go into details in terms of those. On slide 17, we give a graphic outline in terms of that performance, which is captured under slide 16. And because this quarter happens to be a quarter just before we prepare the annual report, we thought that it would be very important to also reflect how we performed over all the quarters, and also reflect what the annual achievement would be. If we look at the quarterly performance from quarter one up to quarter four, there has been a consistent performance in terms of the department, to an extent that the annual performance is pegged at 80%. Now, this quarterly performance is also graphically illustrated on slide 19. Now, we need to also reflect in terms of the reasons for variance, whether we have performed well or we have underperformed. It is a requirement that we also take the portfolio committee into confidence in terms of the reasons why we have overachieved. The two targets in terms of the 15 million households and the 5,000 smallholder producers receiving support was basically pushed by the number of people that we managed to target during the drought that we have had. And we had a debate within the department in terms of this was an unintended consequence because of the drought. We have got to make that admission that that's one of the things that we identified. We also went to look at the 40,000 hectares of underutilized land in communal areas. We were positive in terms of that. With 24 hectares, it's not quite a lot, mainly because the drought is behind us in many areas except for the Western Cape, parts of the Northern Cape, and the Eastern Cape. We have also had a positive return in terms of the number of extension practitioners who were deployed to different commodity groups. Honorable members would recall that at some stage there was a question that was asked by this August Portfolio Committee whether the number 20 is a fixed number, that we cannot do more in terms of that. And through our public sector forums and extension and advisory service, we have been able to really start making an inroad in terms of mobilizing support and ensuring that there is more deployment. This target, while achieved, has meant that we have got to review our targets going forward in terms of the deployment, and we will be amending it accordingly to have more extension practitioners being deployed to community groups, so that we can have a far much broader skills base and also knowledge of our extension officers. We also looking at the graduates who were placed within that is normal kind of achievement. We set ourselves 30, and we achieved 30. We have also achieved in terms of the cooperatives that were there. I will then move to the issues where we had also overachievement, where we had said that we will rehabilitate 3,000 hectares, where we have got a variance of 8,633 hectares. But this is because there were incentives that were put in place by the EPWP to the provinces, and therefore, based on the incentives, you would get more people who more land, and also people who are involved in terms of the rehabilitation of land. We also had the 875 temporary unplanted areas from a forestry point of view, and we had very good rainfalls that meant that we could plant more in these areas. And then lastly, on the Pakisa projects that we had, which also talks to the crowding of private sector investment, we have had very good returns after the involvement of the National Property Committee of Transnet in terms of the projects that were funded, and we had 10 additional funded projects that could be reported as overachievement here. We also had to look at the marine protection and governance issues that would say how many of those patrols in terms of monitoring, control and surveillance would we have, where we had 4 additional programs that we had with other departments in terms of joints and the JCPS cluster that were not planned, but then would come in to really strengthen our work around our marine coastal vigilance. We also had challenges. It was not just plain sailing. We had set ourselves a target to distribute 32 primary animal health care clinics to the provinces. We, at the end of the 31st of March 2017, we only managed to distribute 29. The 3, because of procurement issues, could not be distributed on time, and that is an underachievement. And we had also set ourselves an ambitious target of saying we will then deploy 130 veterinary graduates, of which at the end of the financial year, we could only deploy 127. But there are reasons. One of the graduates could not complete the studies, and the 2 were deployed later during the period. There are issues that we would like to call performance highlights against quarter 4 targets. Most of them might not necessarily be highlights, but also trying to shine light in terms of the work that the department would like to do. I would say there are concerns in terms of the way that we there were concerns that were raised around how we manage risk, and I would say that the area of risk is one of the most improved within the department. We have been able to also, from an HR point of view, implement the HR plan. One area of importance is around the ICT disaster recovery plan. While we have tested and reviewed this successfully, we are currently having challenges. And these challenges are also captured in the audit report that will be availed to the portfolio committee, that there are quite a few, there are a number of aspects around ICT that the department would need to give attention to. And if not, this is going to be one of the Achilles heels of the department going forward. We have been able to, through the help of the audit committee and recognizing today, Chair, Honorable Chair, that we have got the chair of the audit committee here today, being able to come up with an internal audit 3-year rolling plan. While we admit that that has been done, there's still a lot of work that we need to do on the audit within the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. We have been, from an audit point of view, acquired a quality assurance review, which is a satisfactory rating. We have also done the MPET report, we're still just below the 3 that is required to say that the department is on a green. We are currently at the rating of 2.8, but there has been a drastic improvement in terms of the work that this year. And the areas that we didn't perform so well on around governance are the issues that we are currently giving attention to, Honorable Chair and all members. There is also a view that we are having around our stakeholder relations. This is just a reflection in terms of the engagements that we have had with our stakeholders, whether at municipal level, at MINTEC level, and also at ministerial level through the ministerial interactions with the industry. We highlight that this, that to say that we had one farm certified. We are not happy that it's one farm, but what we are currently trying to beam is that this area of work needs a lot of funding, and we have prioritized this through ensuring that CASP will also fund a PPCB to ensure that our farmers are also having a certification in terms of SA GAP. Honorable members would recall that we have got a surveillance program for the exotic fruit flies in South Africa, Bactrocera dorsalis, which is currently absent in the Northern Cape, Eastern Cape, and Western Cape. We have been conducting this, although at a scaled-down level. We have had reports in the Free State. We hope that it will not be able to establish in the Free State, and that is transient, but we will also give reports as and when there is an indication that there might be a population that is building up in the Free State. We also had issues around ensuring that there is performance around legislative work. Honorable members would know that they have engaged with the Agricultural Product Standards Amendment Bill and the National Field and Forest Fire Amendment Bill. We have also, in the meantime, busy with the Agricultural Produce Agent Amendment Bill that is coming through. And in line with our commitments to the Paris Agreement, we have also been able to deal with the climate change plan that would deal with vulnerabilities through adaptation and mitigation. On the issues around forestry and rehabilitation, we have been able to finalize a very important framework, the draft forestry grant fund framework. We have also been able to take through departmental processes, the agro-forestry strategy framework, and also discussed issues around reducing emissions from forest and degradation and deforestation plus, that is red plus, that we have developed. Under fisheries, we have been able to monitor continuously the conditioning of broodstock, and also compiled a report that deals with the genetic aspects that deals with the broodstock, and also set up permit conditions for 6 fishing sectors, that is tuna, so long line, KwaZulu-Natal basin, netfish, seaweed, horse mackerel, and Patagonian toothfish. What are the emerging issues that we are having? Honorable members would recall that one of the areas that we have been advised to do is to say a report is a report, but we should be reporting also on what is happening, what is there in the horizon within the sector. We have got the Aquaculture Development Bill, and with the Aquaculture Development Bill, I would like to also bring in PDALF to say these are currently within the NEDLAC processes, and will be soon be lodged with Parliament. One of the areas that is very important is that at NEDLAC level, the engagements would be on the policy issues and the disagreements that would permeate between what government has and what the private sector and labor has. And at this moment, we are approaching each other in terms of PDALF and also in terms of the Aquaculture Development Bill. And we will be able, as soon as we are ready with both bills, bring them to Parliament. through the necessary processes. On the fall armyworm, we have had an outbreak of the fall armyworm. We have had provinces, we have had industry, we have stakeholders responding. And I will take this opportunity to also thank the work that was done by the portfolio committee around the fall armyworm. To an extent that at this moment, we're no longer concerned about the drop in yields. In actual fact, there are reports now that we might even exceed the 16 million tons in terms of the produce, maize that we will produce, which is more than what we had. The last time we had this was in 1981. And in 1981, the hectares that were planted then were much huger than what we are currently having. So it's also an indication of what technology can do over time to deal with this, while we also note the work that was done on the fall armyworm. On the commercialization of black farmers, I would like to also put a rider in terms of this, that this is the work that is currently being done. The provinces are currently implementing in terms of coming up with the 450 farmers. But we thought that we need to institutionalize the way that we do it. And we went to the Department of Trade and Industry and started comparing notes with them on their successes that they have with the black industrialists. So we are now creating a program that would be in line with the black industrialists that would have funding arrangements, almost similar funding arrangements, where we will have financial institutions, Land Bank, NEF, IDC, coming in to assist us in terms of dealing with the 450 farmers, not only using government grants to create the farmers, but also using a mechanism where the government grants can be used to leverage and assist in getting more funding and private sector investment. We also, in line with the advice that we have had from the portfolio committee and honorable members working on the national policy on comprehensive producer development support, with the current document that we are having, we are ready to go on consultation, and we are optimistic that by the 31st of March we will have it on the table, unlike the last time around when we had promised that it will take 2 years to bring it to the committee. This is the slide that I was talking about, where in terms of DAF, we had validated that from a non-commercial point of view, we could validate 42,000 hectares. But from the crop estimates, which has got three distinct ways of validating this, they have got people from the ARC who go on to farms, they have got people who then would map these areas and would then validate. They came up with a very interesting scenario to say that the non-commercial areas that were planted were actually in a very good region of 366,000 hectares. However, what is worrying in terms of the presentation that is where the yield that would accrue to those is very worrying, because if you have got 366,000 hectares, you would think that the yield would be just above 4 or so, or let's say 3 in terms of dry land, but it's still lower. And we have engaged with the ARC to say that there might be issues of, one, the capability of the department to advise, or secondly, in terms of just ensuring that we have got the right varieties that are used at that level. So the takeaway message in terms of that slide is that there might be work that we need to do in terms of the validation process. And maybe it goes to a point that was raised earlier on when Mpumalanga was presenting, to say on our framework that still needs to be presented here. We might not be hitting the right notes in terms of monitoring and evaluation, evaluating the right areas, and therefore under-reporting instead of reflecting on the current issues on the table. Honourable members would then also know about our commitment towards the African Union, and in that way the CADAP that seeks to then accentuate our commitments in terms of the Malabo Declaration. We are currently busy looking at the seven themes that are currently permeating our commitments. They are all there, starting from the commitment to the CADA process, and lastly, the mutual accountability and results, where our team is currently working on ensuring that we collate data and preparatory aspects to ensure that we have got the report on the table. We were supposed to report on the 31st of July, and we need to make an admission that we were not able to finalize that report, but we are very optimistic by the 31st of August we'll have that report, and we'll have had a validation report with the stakeholders to validate the results of that report. This report is very important because it tracks how South Africa is doing in terms of our Malabo Declaration, and without any doubt, we will also track the aspects in terms of the funding within the sector, which currently sits very low, below what we had committed to. We have just had a presentation on the avian influenza. I'll not say anything around it. And then we will then have to go to the issues around the drought. And I would paraphrase this to indicate that while this report was previously given at different platforms, there was a meeting that was held between the minister and the MEC at MINMEC, where there was an agreement that there is a need in terms of engaging on the drought aspect, the 212 million that was made available, and ensuring that we have got a long-term plan, which I will also highlight in terms of what we had proposed on dealing with drought and other eventualities, that is more coordinating without having a lot of issues that would plague that kind of system. We give an outline in terms of how the 212 million that was allocated for the provinces was spent, with the Eastern Cape receiving 29 million and the Western Cape receiving 12 million. I would also paraphrase it that in consultation with the stakeholders, I've been in contact with the Western Cape just to see what the current arrangement would be in declaration of the drought within the Western Cape as a winter rainfall region, together with the Eastern Cape and Northern Cape. We also give an expenditure report in slide 39, where we have spent to date 97% of the amount. There's a creep that went into the next slide, that is slide 40, where we were indicating that distribution is still ongoing as at that date, but it has been completed to date. So the reporting should be taken as of the 31st of March, as we are concluding. Now, what are the future plans in terms of dealing with drought? And the portfolio committee has been scathing in terms of we have had drought before, and each and every time it's like it's a new phenomenon that we have got to deal with. And we have come up with the plans that we think would be assisting and that would be outlined, starting with establishing an integrated institutional capacity and support at all levels of government, including at COCTA, increasing the awareness and preparedness of impending disasters. We're also looking at how the provinces would also allocate funds, contingency funding in terms of their equitable shares, just to respond to the disasters that we are having. The future plans would also deal with how the NDMC, which is the National Disaster Management Center, through DAF, would be addressing these disasters, because there's a lot of work that we need to do around the drought per se. Honorable Chair and honorable members, we have had challenges, and we make admissions up front that there were a few of these targets that we could not meet, and one of those is the rights allocation to registered smallholder fisheries and projects. We are currently working on finalizing those. We also had permits and licenses issued, knowing that the process would need to unfold on a sequential basis. We were not able to issue in the three sectors, Abalone, West Coast Rock Lobster, and the Higginshaw Troll. We were unable to also conclude on the Agri-BEE enforcement regulations. And to this effect, personally, I have got to say, from a departmental point of view, I think that this is one of the areas where we could have done better. The aquaculture bill I've just indicated, and the PDALF where they are, and the integrated development finance would together with the comprehensive policy on smallholder production come to the committee at the end of this financial year. We also have got issues around the budget constraints, but I'm happy to report, as also reported by the CFO, that the department has submitted to National Treasury our needs going forward. It includes the next year and the outer years. There's also issues around finalizing certain areas around the very same time frames, which is also an issue around dependencies, where we are expected to conclude misconduct cases within 100 days. We have not been able to do this because of other dependencies. And also the issue around the business continuity platform testing, where we have got to ensure that the recommendations as outlined are done. And this is mainly because of our budgetary constraints that we are having. We have already reported in terms of the 130 vets what transpired, and the 32 clinics that we are having. The other issue is the annual review of APAP. The annual review could not be done because at that stage we were also busy with Operation Pakisa and could not do it. But in all fairness, we need to be keeping APAP up to date so that it informs the planning that happens in provinces. At internal audit level, Chair, through you, we have the chair of the audit committee. We would like to indicate that the report was also submitted to the portfolio committee around our audit. There are areas where we are doing quite well, I think, in terms of the programs 4, program 5 are doing well in terms of the department. There are concerns in terms of the collation of information in terms of program 2 and program 3. That's something that we are currently dealing with from a control point of view. There have been recommendations in terms of the improvement areas around the filing system that we need to ensure that our performance information is captured correctly, and also ensuring that we tighten up on our monitoring, evaluation and reporting guidelines that we need to really follow up when we do monitoring and reporting. As indicated, from a risk point of view, we have been able to deal with the risk management strategy, the risk management policy, and the whistleblowing policy and procedures. One of the areas that we need to tighten up on the whistleblowing policy and procedures is aligning it to the instruction that came from National Treasury that deals with whistleblowing when it comes to supply chain management issues. The other areas where we couldn't have good implementation, but the documents were approved, was around the risk management improvement plan, the risk management communication and awareness plan, and the fraud prevention strategy and fraud communication and awareness strategies, which were approved later in the year. We were also able to put up frameworks around risk, where we monitor the strategic risk register, the operational risk register, the program risk register, and the fraud register, Honorable Chair. We will then depart from risk per se, risk management per se, by indicating around communication and awareness that we commemorated as a department the International Fraud Awareness Week last year, where we invited private sector to come and share with the department what the best practices would be, and the DG chaired that session, which is geared towards ensuring that we integrate risk management into the normal way that the department does its functions. On HR, over a period of time, Chair, going to the slides, we have given a 5-year view of what has been transpiring within HR. Of importance is that the staff complement of the department has been decreasing over time, and it continues to decrease. And secondly, the vacancy rate, which should be managed to 10% in terms of the benchmark from DPSA, during this period went up to 11.5%. The reason why we went to 11.5 is that Treasury has put up a ceiling in terms of the appointment of personnel. And there was a point where there was a huge discussion of whether we are filling these vacancies or we are abolishing vacancies. And in line with the discussions that we had with Mpumalanga this morning, one of the areas that we had agreed on was to identify those posts that are critical towards service delivery as those that we will have to fill. We have got a dashboard, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, on a slide that is reflected, that gives almost a clear indication what the post approval, the post establishment is, what are the current posts that are filled, and ending up with the current climate within the department in terms of the misconduct cases that we are handling within the department, and it's there for honourable members to look at. We also plot the vacancy rate in terms of the different months within a quota where you had a sudden jump in terms of the number of vacancies as compared to the last quarter. We also do a staff age profile. Now, we were within our discussion document saying that the normal way of looking at the staff age profile would be a normal bell curve that you would have. This one from the department would signify that you have got an aging department with most of the employees falling on the right on the wrong side of 40, which seems to suggest that we need to start looking at how do we then bring in new blood within the department. And this becomes an issue of discussion with National Treasury, looking at the current issues around the ceiling and also looking at how best would we then allow for us to replenish the system with young blood. We also give the SMS profile. Chair, you would realize that we had at some stage being at 60-40 for a long time. We are happy to say that SMS, we are at 52-48, but still on the wrong side, as Chair would allude. We also go and look at the DIF profile, in essence, which is still a little bit not on the balance side, but we are working towards balancing it off. We hope that in our engagements with National Treasury, we will then be able to look at how we can be able to assist the exiting and then work on a strategy in terms of how those who would be entering the system would be looked at, looking at our employment equity. Chair, we have got the expenditure for the quarter four, and with the CFO being here, I would like to hand over to him so that he can take us through that one. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. Thank you, Acting DG. I'm on slide 62. On slide 62, we are showing the budget for the whole year, which is 6.5 billion, and then the spending per month, that is for the month of January, February, March, and then the cumulative amount, for example, under administration, the cumulative amount is 166 million, which account for 19.7% instead of 25%. And then if I were to look at forest and natural resource management, the spending is at 347 million, which account for 32%. Now, on the next slide, which is slide 63, we are giving reasons, but you will notice that the reasons that we have given have a ripple effect from the first month, whereby the spending in the first month or first quarter, there were payments that were made, for example, to ARC. We make double payments in the first quarter and second quarter, and also there were issues of claims from DERCO on our foreign offices. And then also for Program 6, there's a payment that we make to the Marine Living Resource Fund in respect of vessel operations, and that is made on the third quarter. And because of it, the spending for the fourth quarter seems to be less than the 25% that we target. Then what happens on the slide 64, we then look at each and every quarter, the spending per quarter. For example, in total, the first quarter we spend 1.6 billion, and then the second quarter it's 1.7 billion. The third quarter is 1.7 billion again, and then the last quarter is 1.3 billion. I think I also need to pause here, Chair and the honorable members, and indicate that in the fourth quarter, as staff, due to budget cuts, we seem to be struggling to pay our suppliers within 30 days, because at that time we are managing the budget in order that we don't overspend. But we had a discussion internally that we might need to look at the reprioritization within our budget, because what it has is that whatever we don't pay in the last three months, we have to pay that in the first quarter of the new year, which affects the service delivery for the new year. And then I will move to slide 65. And then here we are looking at the economic classification for the fourth quarter. And then on slide 66 is for each and every quarter based on the economic classification. And then, for example, in quarter one for compensation of employees, we spend 477, and then quarter two, 488, and then quarter three, 500 million, and then quarter four, it's 471. And then for goods and services, first quarter, it was 233 million, second quarter, 177 million, and then quarter three, it was 184 million, and then quarter four, 282 million. And then for our transfers and subsidies, in the first quarter it's 885 million, and then second quarter it's 1.026 billion, third quarter 1.003 billion, and then in the fourth quarter 603 million. And then the next slides, from slide 68 till slide 73, We are showing our budget and our actual spending per quarter based on the targets that we have set. For example, if we look at slide 68 towards the end where it's bolded, the budget for targets there, we have a budget of 148. You will see that in terms of our spending, we ended up spending 161 for the whole targets. And then program one, I think, as it's indicated there, most of the targets, most of the services they rendered is general services instead of our actual business. But then if you look at program 2 and especially program 3, you'll notice that the bulk percentage, especially in program 3 on slide 70, the budget and the actual spending relates to targets. And then we've got the other programs 4, 5, and 6. And then the last slide on slide 74, we are just showing for the whole department that for targets, our budget was 3.1 against the budget of 6.5. And then in terms of spending, it's 3.2 billion against the 6.4. I thank you, sir.
Thank you, CFO. Honorable Chair, honorable members, that concludes the Q4 presentation that we have had. I conclude on a very bad note. to say the discussions that we have had earlier on the highly pathogenic avian influenza, it has just then be confirmed that the farm in Standerton is positive, and that would mean that we would need to cull almost 35,000 birds around that area. Thank you.
Thank you, DG and DG and the team. Chair, what's the audit committee? So you can present, tell us the story. Why there are still issues on your finances? Yeah.
I represent here an audit committee
Thank you, Chair. I represent an audit committee which has five independent members, the chairperson, myself, attended on their behalf. The department has had a committee for a while now. In terms of the report that has been tabled quarter four, we have processed it as a committee. In fact, we process all their performance reports on a quarterly basis, including both financial and performance reports. The mandate of the audit committee from an oversight point of view can be defined to entail seven areas, which I will briefly outline and indicate in which areas we remain with a concern and which areas we're happy as the audit committee. The first area would relate to internal controls and the control environment. Our work would include the review of the leadership culture, policies and frameworks, as well as governance structure. As a committee, we're happy with the work of the department in this area. We have, of course, areas which I will indicate later as I outline where we have significant concerns. The other area is the area of financial management and reporting. Our work would involve the quarterly review of the financial reports as well as the financial statements, including issues of value for money, particularly in the area of SCM. In the previous years, we have had issues within the area of SCM. Those areas have drastically reduced. Whilst we have not routed all incidents of irregular expenditure, but generally we have improved, the department has improved significantly in those areas. Also linked to that area is the whole question of adherence to prescripts. In essence, compliance. The third area, Chair, is the area of performance information and reporting. In this area, our committee would look at usefulness and reliability. In terms of usefulness, we would evaluate whether the set targets are smart and whether they are relevant and consistent with the APP in terms of the reporting. From a reliability point of view, we would look at whether the reports are valid, accurate, and complete. The department has, I think, out of sheer size, and given the data that is reported and the coordination issues with provinces, has generally been challenged in this area for years. We made a commitment at the one of the appearances to this committee that we will continue to prioritize this area as an audit committee. And I'm pleased, Chair, to report that when we in fact discuss the annual report, which we will in due course, that the committee will observe that indeed there would have been significant improvements in the area of performance information management. We're not here we want to be. We would attain a clean audit if we reach where we want to be. But the progress in that area is notable. The fourth area is risk management. The work of my committee in this area would relate to ensuring that the relevant frameworks for risk management are in place, that there's a combined assurance framework, and that management actually has put together effective risk mitigation measures. This is another area of concern. We've spoken to it at length. Even the issue of the outbreak of the disease we spoke about earlier is part of this area. In fact, under the risk area, some of the concerns which we have engaged management about relate to border control for goods, plants, and animals, all of which, if not well funded, as is the case currently, would expose the department to instances such as the ones we've seen. We've highlighted with management concerns on the ICT area, largely relating to investments or funding in that area, which also exposed the department to significant risk. The issue of value for money, Chair, the department, as has been noted by the Auditor General, which we will discuss again in future, is not able to undertake monitoring at the level that it ought to. And most of these are related to the issues of resourcing and the issue of budget overruns, which is a significant issue. Hence the earlier report that a business case has been placed before National Treasury with regard to funding. Chair, we also look at the ICT. We look at the effectiveness, access controls, physical controls, the existence of a business continuity plan, and we've seen improvements in this area. We're not where we should be, but we've seen improvements. We look at internal audit, and we look at the external audit itself with a view to ensuring that issues of independence, coordination between the functions, referring to internal audit and external audit, are all in place. In a nutshell, Chair, we are not telling off a good story, but we certainly are not telling off a bad story. I have been with this committee for the last 4 years now, and I can confirm that there have been significant improvements in governance in general, and in particular on the specific issues that were a problem when we assumed duty. At the time, the biggest problem was governance itself. None of the committees were functional. Some of them were not in place. Internal audit was exceptionally weak. We can confirm now that we've got a functioning internal audit. We've got a functioning risk management committee, albeit we have concerns, which we will outline, I think, when we look at the annual report. But in fact, the governance structures are in place. The issues of performance information management, which was a huge issue when we assumed duty, has also improved, except program 4 in terms of the annual report, which had issues in terms of the smartness of targets. And there has been no material findings in relation to the other programs. I want to think, if my memory serves me well, that this would be the first year that in fact we have not qualified in any program in terms of reliability. I'm referring to usefulness, completeness, and accuracy, which is a great improvement. And lastly, we've also observed significant improvements in the financial administration space, particularly the areas of supply chain management. I'm referring to the incidence of either irregular or fruitless expenditure. Chair, I want to stop there and to later respond to any comments or questions the honourable members may have. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for the question. Are you tired? Why? No, I'm just looking what you're saying, like, yeah. Okay, so Honorable Maloy, Honorable Mungave, Honorable Sain, Honorable Tapa, and Honorable Mapang.
No, thanks, Chair. This is a graveyard session, so we won't be long. Now, Chair, firstly, you know, I thought the DG of this department is Mike Mlenga. Now I see a new one here. I don't know what's happening. Can we be informed what's happening with the new DG? The second thing, acting DG. You know, we have said that you don't have enough resources. Your budget is 6.8 billion. And we want to help you to save this money. And one of the things we said you must do is to ensure that you don't bring a huge delegation because we want you to save money. I see a big delegation. I'm not sure whether is it because it is for the first time that you are addressing the committee as the acting DG. Now you want that as many soldiers around you as possible. You might want to clarify us. Chair, my only question is on the commercialization of smallholder farmers. What informs the 50 per province? Because you want to commercialize 450 and you are saying it will be 50 per province. So I can imagine if Northern Cape has got 70 farmers and then Northwest has got 1,000. So it doesn't make sense. Why don't you do it proportionally? Because to me, proportionally will make a lot of sense instead of you just saying 50 per province. It doesn't make sense. That's the only question I have, Chair. I have a lot of questions, but I'll come back to those. But just on slide 29, are you sure that the National Field and Forest Fire Amendment bill belongs here? It's part of the bills that must go submitted to the Minister for Cabinet approval, because I thought that bill it is now before the Portfolio Committee. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Greetings to the department and members once again. Only two questions, Chair. The one for the DG has been covered by the whip. Just only on slide 63, CFO, I want to understand why there was a double payment for Agricultural Research Council in both quarter one and two. That's the first one. Number two, I need a clarity on your foreign offices. Program 4, I don't understand what's happening there. It's like you receive a claim from DECO regarding your foreign offices, or you are paying DECO in their foreign offices. I just want to understand, because I do not have a knowledge that your department is somehow playing ambassadorial role in certain circumstances. Thank you, Chair.
It's very hot inside here. We're all guys get for avian influenza. Chairperson, I've got a few questions. My first question is, may we ask questions to the audit committee? Chair? Sorry, can we ask to the audit?
Questions?
To the audit committee.
Yes, you can.
Okay.
They are here to account.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. And I
must not jump the rule of three.
Three to them and three to the department.
No one else asked
questions.
No.
Okay, I'll start with the three to the audit of the department. I know the answers already. Chairperson, to the audit committee, I'm happy that you sound very upbeat, and I'm really glad that there's movement, that we do have an audit committee. I've asked the Office of the Auditor General this question in the past, and it's one of the concerns that I've been having for a long time, and I'll give you two examples quickly. It's about the validity of what you get. So my understanding is that the Auditor General's office, and then also maybe the Audit Committee, although you're not the same people, validate money spent. So you see there was an invoice sent, it was paid, whatever. but you don't validate what it was spent on. And I'll give you an example. I've done some oversight this week, past 3 weeks, Chairperson. I took the boreholes and I took an answer that I received from the minister, a written question on fencing. And what I found on the ground is actually shocking. So the money was spent, the millions and whatever on those two things was spent. But what it was spent on is my concern. And I'll give you one example. In Limpopo Chair, there was a fence for a red meat something, a Morimoli red meat project. The fence cost 1.4 million rand per kilometer. I went to look. It's not an electrified fence. It's a normal sheep, keep sheep inside fence. And there's not even gates there. The gates is takke, gepak. And it's not the only place that I found like that, Jane. There were many of them. Of more concern were the boreholes. I went to check, GPS. Many of them is not even there. Some of them was drilled a few years ago. When I speak to the communities on the ground, they said, yes, there's a borehole, but it was there for 10 years or 15 years. So I want to find out from the audit committee, when are we getting to a point that we actually validate value for money or what it is spent on? Because we spent. I don't have a problem with that. That is happening. Every year we report 100% of expenditure. My problem is with what is it spent on, and when do we get to that point that we can actually validate? So my only question to the department chair is, your 50% of costs, and now he's talking to the acting DG. The 50% of what you are going to look on the ground, when are we going to get some kind of report on that is actually what this was spent on? Because I'll bring reports every month. I'll bring reports. I'm on the ground. And I'm very concerned, Jay, that what we are reporting on is not what's on the ground. And where is the DG? Can we get a report on that? I don't want to read in the media. Honorable Papa.
Thank you, Chair. Just one question. On your slide 50, where on risk management and fraud prevention framework, you further mentioned that the following documents were approved but could not be fully implemented due to human capacity and budgetary constraints. The only comfort that I wanted to ask here is whether this problem or the situation has been improved from this budgetary and human capacity constraints. So that if I would like to believe that it's a situation that is going to be perpetrated forever or even for a longer period, but I just think maybe there are things that you have not mentioned that have been done or are being done to improve the situation. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Greetings to the Honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, the acting DG and the department, the colleagues. Firstly, Chair, let me apologize for late coming. The weather conditions at site is affecting the operations of the flight. So I think my apology will be welcome and accepted. Chair, let me welcome the presentation and also commend them that they were able to achieve the 97%. To me, it's a job well done. It means that it equals to the task. Chair, my question is on slide 14. What are the causes influencing the negative on the balance towards achieving the MTSF target? That's the first question. And on slide 25, Chair, it is impressive that there were 69 investigations conducted on the prioritized fisheries sector. What were the outcomes of those investigations? My last question, Chair, it's on slide 43. It relates on the challenges affecting non-achievement. What are the status reports thus far towards the target affected since the finalization report will be in the 2018? I thank you, Chair.
Thank you, honorable members. On your slide, probably I've missed it. Because it's the fourth quarter. One would have to see the number of jobs created in all the sector and the number of jobs that were, or the number of jobs that were created, whether it's permanent and I had just spoken about EPWP and at what point do we know that this job is temporary for 2 weeks or 3 months? Do you call it a job creation? Because the outcome is, say, creating a decent job. So for EPWP, it's an opportunity. Job opportunity. It's not a decent job. So I think I didn't get that. If maybe I can be helped, one of the things that, because most of my questions would come as we're going to deal with those issues that we have postponed, because that's where monitoring and evaluation come from, and the department, as a national department, must deal with mostly with monitoring of your entities and provinces and the collaboration and that you have with provinces and the last thing is on the statistics that you have given us. The new statistics. Did this information reach the provinces? If not, can it be communicated to provinces? And as you, because you said we must invite you to come and give us the picture, that invitation, I think, will do it. But we want to know where is these people, where you locate these people, because we don't want to discuss the numbers without people. And the other things that we've agreed on, honorable members, is that in the next year, ATP, we expect to have, we're going to evaluate the impact of the program, because there our last year. We're not going to deal with this number. So I just reminded by yourself, Honorable Singh, when you say you've done what. So at the time we're dealing with, as we're going to deal with the APP next financial year, we'll be now dealing with evaluating the impact of the budget of 5 years into a particular program, whether it's still necessary to have such program if it doesn't make any impact. So we'll be the issue of the DG, we have received a letter from the Minister, Honorable Malu, indicating that DG has been suspended. I hope Minister will be here to take us through what that means. Because we don't want situation of people being suspended, say the whole contract earning the salary but not anything done to them, or if the issues must be hearing in time, so that if they whatever misunderstanding, we need a permanent DG to do the work. So Minister is not here to give us support, so I didn't want to bother acting DG. Probably we could have get was going to go out of this office, this room, because he will not answer the question. So I'm sorry that we have not indicated, Honorable Members, who have received the letter. I thought Albertina has circulated the letter to members that the DG has been suspended. So, DG?
The document that was circulated, it looks to me like exactly the same one that's in the document, in the presentation. So Chair, I just want clarity, or the one in the presentation, if that's correct, or because I'm just a bit concerned that we might sit with the wrong one that was handed out now as the new information.
Thank you, Chair.
No, Honourable Stand, if you look at the added the population in the new one, and they even indicate the change. The change means that you minus it was before, which means minus the previous report, then you minus that number. If it's positive, you add that number, then we give you the answer.
Yeah, Chairperson, but when we got this, we were informed that it's different to what was sent to us. That's my query. And to me, the two looks exactly the same. So I'm not sure if we got the old one again.
Not 100%, Honorable Speaker.
Okay, all right. I'll check that.
Okay, it's not.
It's a long hot day here inside.
Yeah, no, it's not, Honorable Speaker.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I will start maybe with the issues that you have raised. We will do the evaluation or the impact assessments in terms of the programs that we are having and see what has been the impact over the MTSF period. We also have got to indicate from what Honorable Maloyo was saying, whether the new delegation was just to add to the team that comes here. I think we need to indicate that previously when we appeared here, Honorable Chair had indicated that she would like to have direct responsibility of the DDGs on a particular matter. But if it's a directive that we scale down, we can in terms of the team that we are having, because we normally have got meetings where there's a clear understanding of what's happening on the programs. I'll wait to be guided on that level, Chair. The issue around commercialization of the 450 farmers.
I didn't get it.
What I'm indicating is that at some stage, the portfolio committee had indicated that as we appeared, the question would be where are the DDGs in terms of particular programs. And therefore, we made it a standard practice, especially when it comes to reporting function, that we bring the DDGs to the portfolio committee. However, if the portfolio committee is of the view that we scale down, we will scale down, because our understanding from the way that we do work, the colleagues can respond to quite a lot of the questions that are here. If we are guided, otherwise we will do that.
No, but DG, you are not responding to the question. You're supposed to say we I'm leading the team of DDGs as requested by Portfolio Committee. And you want to tell me all these people are DDGs?
Apologies, Chair. The other members who are here, in terms of the team, would have been to come and explain certain things that transpired between ourselves and Mpumalanga, and also give information on other few issues. But I take it from that level, Chair, in terms of the guidance that has been given. The issue on the commercialization of the 450 farmers, whether there has been proportion about that, I will give over to Ntate Msomi to respond. There has been an issue around the double payment to the ARC. The CFO will respond to it, and the issue around the foreign offices. I will then quickly indicate that when it comes to foreign offices, the acting DDG responsible for EDTM will respond to that one. Apart from the audit issues that were raised by Honorable Stein, there were questions that were asked on the reports in terms of value for money, and that Khobokwe would respond to the performance issues. And then lastly, in terms of the risk management and capacity, I will respond to that area. Honorable Mbapanga asks a few questions, one around what influences our performance, that the Khoboko will have to respond to that one. We have got a question around the fisheries sector on the 69 investigations. Ntate Justice is here. He will respond to those. And we will also, from a performance point, give a status report on the other areas. Now, the areas that were raised by the Chair around the general household survey, I would like Ntate Msomi just to respond on those. I think that covers the questions that were asked, and I would ask the colleagues then to respond in an order that we start with performance management, then go to Ntate Msomi, go to EDTM, and then finalize with fisheries. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Acting DG. Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. I will start with the question on value for money. I would want to respond by saying, to start off by saying, work in terms of ensuring value for money is undertaken within the branch PPME. We have got what we call verification visits, which are part of the monitoring and evaluation. We have a unit which is undertaking this work. What actually happens is they've got a database of all the CASP-funded projects as we have them on the ground, and they have the business plans of all these projects. And at regular times, they go down on the ground, they visit specific projects, and when they visit this project, they have the business plan of this project. So they look at the business plan, what was intended to be achieved, the money that is involved in the project, and then they assess progress in terms of that particular project. And then they draft a report on that. I must indicate, Chair, however, that more could have been done. More has not been achieved in this. I'm talking about in terms of the number of projects that I visited per financial year. And it is mainly because of the limited capacity of staff in the unit. But through this work, through this strengthening of monitoring and evaluation, the allocation that has been received from National Treasury, we have made a proposal, to the DG to say if part of this allocation could be used to strengthen the human capacity in that unit, then we will be able to visit many projects in a financial year. Chair, I must indicate that in these reports, pertinent recommendations are made to the HODs of the provinces. Where it is discovered that this particular project is actually is a potential waste of money, such recommendations are made in the reports, and such reports are then forwarded to the HODs in the provinces. That is the bit that we are doing so far in terms of just making sure that there is value for money in terms of the projects that are being implemented. Now, in terms of the MTSF, I think there was a question, I think it is from Honorable Mapanga, in terms of constraints that are affecting the achievement of certain targets, particularly related to MTSF projects. We would like to say this, Chair, to admit at the very beginning, to say this is still a very, very difficult area to manage. You'll recall that earlier the chairperson of the audit committee indicated that management of performance information is still a very difficult area, and I will explain why it is still a problematic area. It is a problematic area in the sense that within our concurrent arrangement, provinces report to DPME at different times, different time frames. We also have CASP as our grant fund, which is reporting at a different time. We also have other coordinating departments that are involved towards the achievement of the MTSF project. And they also report not to DAF directly, but to the coordinators of the MTSF targets. So we are still working very, very hard, you know, to try to bring everybody together in terms of reporting. And one strategy which we have identified, which is going to address this challenge of reporting at different times, reporting to different people, is the establishment of working committees. We believe that if we can establish working committee, for example, if we establish a working committee around what we consider to be an MTSF target, say food security, as an example. Everybody sits at this, provinces, the private sector, DAF, and this working committee is chaired by the Department of Agriculture. We believe that at the very beginning, certain things can be agreed upon in terms of plans, targets, time frames, reporting mechanisms, reporting templates, and so forth and so forth. And I can report, Chair, that this is the work that we are currently undertaking as staff, you know, to make sure that by next year we do have effective functional working committees. They will help us a great deal in terms of, you know, coordinating and bringing everybody to the party in terms of reporting and in terms of managing performance information. Thank you, Chair.
Hello. I've got a fear that your department will be the department of meeting without implementation. I have that fear. I think probably we might want to deal with it when we're going to look at your structure, because now we'll be talking outside the picture of what we're talking about. Because that monitoring, I don't see it will help you. Because, by the way, you are ending the 5 years next year, and you're still talking about how you should monitor and cast. We've been asking this question the beginning of the term. Next year is the end of the term. we are still thinking what the working committee is. So it's a problem. But we are going to deal with it when we are going to look at the issues of structures. We'll bring it back to the discussion. Because at least 2 months, as we leave our term, we should make sure that the institution has been established so that those that are coming, they will be able to take the work forward without challenges. So I don't want us to make debates around the issues again, because it's a problem. You can proceed.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. My name is Bonga Msomi. I will answer two questions that have been allocated to me by the Acting Director General. The first one is on the commercialization of 450 farmers, whether shouldn't we have allocated them proportionally. I quite agree with the Honorable Member that we could have done that. I think what we did this time, we wrote the document and then we gave the province a criteria. We said at least we must have 50. And this one also got into the State of the Nation address, so hence we had to make sure that we fund it. And as we speak this financial year, we have allocated 20% of the CASP, which is about 220 million, which is mostly designated for commercialization of the smallholder farmers to make them commercial, assist them to get markets and the like. But I quite agree with the Honourable Member that going forward, as the Acting Director General explained, we'll be bringing in the NEF, Land Bank, and the ITC, then and also crowding in private sector investment. On the second question from the Chair, on the steps, general household statistics, whether the question was whether did it reach the provinces, I'll say not yet, but we are on the verge of doing that. Yesterday, the department was invited by the States General to explain thoroughly the figures. So we, but the question of the chair, whether do we know where these people, the 600 people that have gone out and how did these people get out of poverty? We can answer that the South Africa has got one of the most robust social programs, starting with the 17 million that is on the social grants, of which 11 million child care grant. Then we have got the school feeding scheme, which is 9 million. So all these programs, including the DSD programs on early childhood development, community soup kitchens, they contribute to us. It's not only the agricultural department, but ourselves as the coordinator of the department in of the government in food security. Hence, we report on this. We work with State South Africa in coining the questions that are used during the general household survey. So, we also have allocated an amount of about 22 million within the CASP framework to assist with the rolling out of the SADC sponsored South African vulnerability assessment, which will now allow us to actually allocate, put names to these families that are vulnerable and food insecure, so that then as the agricultural department with the provinces, we can better target our programs to these particular individuals, especially the Fesatlala Food Production Initiative. I think I'll leave it at there. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you to the Honourable Members. I am Kwinako Mapi. I will take the question on the foreign offices. Chair, we have a total of 9 representatives throughout the offices abroad. And those people are representing DAF interests in those offices. Essentially, DERCO as the custodian of the relationships outside of the country, they pay for the allowances of these people. And once
the allowances are paid, that's when they bring the invoices through to us as a department, and we reimburse the Department of Foreign Relations of Foreign Relations and of International Relations. Chairperson, I'm sorry for that pronunciation. Thank you.
Chair, I would respond on the question on the ARC double payment by Honorable Mwabe. Based on the previous payment history that the department has under conditional grants, we determine what we call payment schedules, and then based on those we release conditional grants as per those payment schedules. For example, with provinces, the first quarter we release 10%, but with ARC, because of the initial request that they have within the first two quarters, we release double payments. Thank you.
Chair, thank you. Maybe just to make a last comment on the matter that was raised with regard to monitoring, taking into account the earlier response by management. Of the 6.5 billion budget of the department, 3.5 is transfers, which equates to about 54%, which means that in essence the bulk of what we do we have others doing it on our behalf, which increases the need for monitoring. I think about 2 years ago, we argued the case with National Treasury, and we received some funding adjustment in our baseline, which assisted us to improve the level of monitoring that we're doing. It is nowhere near what it is. Under different circumstances, where we a country that generally does things the right way, it probably would be enough, because one would argue that you only need to do monitoring at a sample basis. But when there's propensity for things to go wrong more than they should, then the sample basis becomes a problem. Then you have to invest overly on monitoring instead of even on service delivery. So I concur with the concerns that even though we're doing it, if you were to take 10 projects and visit them, you probably would come back with a different story. But it's a matter, as we look at getting more funding that we've raised with management, that we still need to further upscale. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Members. And thank you to the DG. I will respond to the question dealing with the 69 investigations. My name is Justice Machiri. The 69 investigations deal with the rights holders breaking the law. Some of those who go around overcatching, and some of them just going out there and catching all the wrong species instead of the species they're supposed to catch. And some of these using wrong gear. You have to get permits to use certain type of gear, so they go around using all the wrong gear. And others, some of these cases are dealing with human trafficking and drugs, deadly stuff out there. The others, five of these cases deal with abalone. We've had containers of abalone intercepted in Hong Kong and sent back to South Africa. We have two of these cases currently under investigation. These are with the National Prosecuting Authority. This is the information I can give right now concerning these investigations. Most of these investigations, I'm told, the information is kept highly confidential because these are investigations that are still running, and they try by all means to keep the information confidential so they could be able to arrest these perpetrators. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. The last one, Chair, asked about the number of jobs created in the sector and whether they are permanent or temporary, and whether this can be described as decent jobs. And in the introduction that we made earlier on was that the issue around the jobs created in the sector, we have given that figure to be 42,000 going forward. However, if Chair looks at the statistics, South Africa jobs, it's almost 875,000 jobs within the sector during that particular point in time. And we still need then to tease out the figures in all fairness. What I would commit to do is that we would then send the breakdown in terms of the 40-odd thousand jobs that we are having within the sector to clearly delineate what kind of jobs are they from our side, but also go further to say we also need to go broader to say that what kind of jobs have been created over the MTSF period. Thank you very much, Chair. I think that concludes the questions that were asked by honourable members. Thank you very much, Chair.
Honourable members, you still have a chance to follow up questions. Honourable Maloyi, Honourable Stay. Oh, your question.
Chair, let me just be saying
Honourable Skapa.
I think you forgot my question.
What was that? Can you remind them?
One on the...
In slide 50.
Apologies, Honourable Kappa. The question was around the you were happy with the approval of the documentation, but whether the human resource aspect, the capacity has been looked at, and what is currently happening. We do not have the capacity even to date. That is why one of our actions was to say within the MTF options, let us see how much we can get from National Treasury in terms of dealing with certain aspects within the department. However, from what we had submitted, which we will share with the portfolio committee, that we had tried to look at core areas within the department that would be looked at from an MTF budget options with National Treasury. Thank you very much.
Honourable Maloyi.
Chair, if you go to page or slide 33, and I want to read this because this is what makes me angry. A draft commercialization document and program is being developed and will be presented to the executive for approval. That is under commercialization of black farmers. Now, HOD, you see this makes me angry. The State of the Nation address was in February. The APP was presented shortly after the State of the Nation address, where you encapsulated this important target. And from where I'm sitting, before the President addressed the nation, he had an opportunity to interact with the minister and so on. And the minister confirmed that in this financial year we'll be able to deliver on this important target. It is now August as we speak. And you are telling us that you are still developing a program which is still to be presented to the executive for approval. From where I'm sitting, it means in this financial year you will not be able to do anything because we're already in August, because that document must still be discussed and so on and so forth. So I don't know, how are you planning? Because from where I'm sitting, even before the President could make this announcement in the State of the Nation address, we are supposed to have started working on this document, presented it to your ex-co and so on, and got the necessary approvals, etc., etc. So you need to plan properly, and you are not planning properly. And this is an important target which must be achieved by this particular department, and it seems you are not taking it serious. So I'm just saying, going forward, you need to plan properly. When the President makes pronouncements, you know that you are ready to start implementing, instead of you coming here and saying you are still developing and so on and so forth. I have a problem with that one. Then on your page or slide 48, those recommendations that you are making there, or let me start here. Who is making those recommendations? Is it you or is it somebody else making the recommendations to you? But if it is you, to who are you making those recommendations to? Because from where I'm sitting, you are supposed to be doing work, not making recommendations. Because you are the implementers. We must make recommendations and other people, and you must implement. So if you can just clarify, who are you recommending to in order for us to be able to say to that person, there are these recommendations, what have you done with these recommendations? The last, the one before last question is on slide 40. Slide 40. Where you talk about, I think it's the Northwest and one other province that is still distributing fodder. Northern Cape. Are we still distributing fodder up until today? And if we go there, will we find that fodder? Is it stored somewhere and so on? So, yeah, she's disrupting me, but it's okay. I know she's excited about this aspect. So, Chair, the last one is on slide 41. You know, I don't want to sound like President Thabo Mbeki. This thing that we have written here, is this a vision, a mission, or a plan? Because to me, it doesn't sound like a plan. Because, you know, a plan, I think Thabo Mbeki did lecture you about the plan, what do we mean when we talk about a plan, and so on and so forth. But here, it is not a plan. A plan, you must be able to tell us whether you're going to do these things, and so on and so forth, on which date, etc., etc. That will be a plan. But there you are just telling us what you intend to do and so on. It sounds like a vision or a mission, but you are saying it's a future plan. Is this a plan or a vision? That what we are envisaging to achieve in future and so on. Thanks, Chair.
Chair, since Honorable Malloy is now upset, I've been very upset for a very long time, but let me tell you why I'm upset. Chair, last week in my visit, I met a farmer, he's 65 years old. He told me, after a long story, he said to the officials, he didn't go to exile for 20 years for officials to come and spit in his face. And I was so upset, Chair. And I'll tell you why. This morning when Mpumalanga was here, we spoke about those two farmers that's under PLAS. And I, it is in my brain recorded what was said here. He said, after our visit, they went and made a plan and discussed it with rural development. Those farmers are dying out there on the farms. Dying. They can't move. Now, on the same page 33, under commercialization of black farmers, there's national policy of on comprehensive produce development support. The two work hand in glove. If we can't even give people an extended lease or something to move, they have to sit and pray and beg and threaten and bribe and whatever you want to do, the department officials to come and assist you. If we can't fix that, honorable members, we won't fix those two things on page 33. We can do whatever we want. We can pay 1.4 million rand for a kilometer of fence. And Chairperson, what also upsets me, I got the two answers from the minister that someone in this department had to give to the minister because the minister doesn't know how many fences and boreholes was done. Someone had to give it to him. I could see at a glance that that is nonsense. You can't pay 2.6 million rand for 4 kilometers of fencing. You don't need to send someone on the ground to see that there is nonsense going on there. I'm really upset now about this, Chair. If I can sit in my desk in Venterstad and pick up the phone and ask the co-op, how much does it cost to fence a normal fence? How much for a when you have cattle fencing? How much if it's electrified fence? And you can see that people are stealing from poor farmers that cry and say to me, we are killing them on the ground. And then we come and sit here and people are, well, we need what money, there's no money to go and do. You can do it on a desktop, Chair. It's too much. I've been dealing with this now for 9 years. We are not moving. And animals are dying. And with that, people are dying. Farmers shot themselves last year in the drought. And we sit and talk about still implementing and the thinking of plans. I just, it's too much.
Any other follow-up members? I think I'm going to raise some few things which follow up on the issue that was raised by Honorable Maloy on the State of the Nation address. Because it's not mentioned yet, the issue of the 30% requirement for smallholders. So, it's a pronouncement that was made by the President and what was the end of the financial year. And last time when we talked to the department, we indicated that Treasury practice notes, blah, blah. So how far are we? What arrangement have you done for smallholder farmers? Because last time when I remember, you've spoken about your budget as a department, making arrangements for state procurement for locals. But this portfolio committee made it very clear that the department has a responsibility to create an enabling environment for smallholder farmers to access that procurement, 30% procurement in the system of government. And listening to the provinces, I had only the Premier of KwaZulu-Natal, no, the MEC of KwaZulu-Natal, the Premier, that they grouped the cooperatives, those that are farming vegetables and blah, blah, they are delivering to school and blah, blah. But none of other provinces has spoken about this issue. And we sat here and say this is the responsibility of national department to come up with a framework that will enable that environment to happen for smallholder farmers. And which goes to three issues that are outstanding, and at least there is a progress on one, comprehensive support, which has been adopted by cabinet, but still for submitted to cabinet, but due for consultation. And the second issue is integrated fund model, which goes with the target for the commercialization of smallholder farms. Because if you don't have these three things, you will continuously preparing every now and then create a new way to come and report to the portfolio committee. Because you have not done what you have. The focus of the department, particularly the programming, five, food security, blah, blah. Three. Or five is forestry. So it was supposed, their daily work now, supposed to focus on these three things, because it's the ones that will make them to make targets, as outlined by the President. I know that even this thing of submitted to cabinet, I'm asking myself the last time when we had this meeting, receiving that document, I was so pissed off with the the document that was supposed to be the comprehensive support, if members remember that. So I'm not sure what is this thing that has been submitted to cabinet. So I'm not sure. This thing that has been submitted to cabinet is working. So I'm emphasizing you might want to change the language and bring some salt in it. As long as you don't have the comprehensive support system, which captures even the smallholder farmer that you have, because now you say you are supporting 500. If I go to one farmer now, you find that you have just built a fence. It's a support, fine, but can that person become a commercial farmer? So that's, yes. So, and we said that, and by the way, one of the things that we pick up when we're in Limpopo is that those farmers that are trying, they are working, they're trying to work, they are not getting assistance from government. Or the assistance is not in terms of the needs of the farmers. Just say, no, we can only build a pack house. The rest, you'll see to finish. But when you create a commercial farmer, means that you must do certain things. What are those things that you are going to do to this farmer? Which are those farmers that have you identified? And that's the action plan that we're supposed to have at least received, say, this is a target, we won't achieve it, but this is the action plan that, because these things need this and this and this and this. But the information that you have given us is not helpful. We said that in your program, as when you're dealing with drought ditch, you remember we said that we should now deal with drought as part of the climate change challenges, as you develop an adaptation mitigation strategy of the sector, then you should include issues of drought and be costed and all those things. So that as you submit it to Treasury and Department that is responsible to coordinate climate change, you have a document that is costed, and you know, like one of the things that we have been raised stress was on climate change, the drought. The weather changes brings a lot of either diseases or drought. If you have enough rain, you're going to have a lot of diseases in some instances. So we're supposed to, but I see that the program is talking about the drought and not the strategy. And 10 years back, that president, after the flood, if you remember, it was said that each department must take 1% of its budget. What is that fund, Honorable Matai? Disaster fund, yes. And each sphere of government. So when I was looking at the report, my question that comes to my mind is that how much did agriculture save for that purpose, including its provinces and municipalities, besides the 200 and something that Treasury could have given for you to deal, and what impact did that program have? So I think we need a strategy to deal with all the effects of climate change, and because if we deal with drought only, it's going to create problems, because we'll have floods tomorrow, and then it moved from program 3 to program 2, Ramaswamy's program, where they will then have a lot of diseases. So you come again and say, which I'm still having a question and I can't answer that, because that thing cannot fly from the sea. It means that it's come with somebody with a briefcase. How did it land that here in South Africa? No one wants to talk about it, but I would appreciate if measures have been put in place that such diseases, they don't reach us. I was giving example that when you go to Europe, in your own flight, SAA, yeah, you'll be sprayed, you know, when you leave here. When you arrive, when you land, you'll be sprayed in that flight. But I'm not sure whether those that come from Europe, do they get the same treatment where they've been sprayed? So who must do that work? Because if armyworm was able to land in Africa, somebody was carried accidentally or purposefully so in his back. So, but our measures, do we have that measures to make sure that such things does not land in our country? So, the last question is that I was asked by, you know, I had a call from one graduate, say, you know, I've got master's in something agriculture. I was in intern in one of the departments of agriculture. Cannot remember because I'm picking up a lot of calls. But these people, they got posts, they have not been absorbed. So how do you deal with that such situation, DG? How do you manage that? These graduates, as we are making noise that we must not close agricultural colleges, we demanded that there must be universities focusing on agriculture. How then do you protect these graduates that they don't end up being job seekers when there is a lot of work which need to be done? You know, it's just DM is not here. When I was invited, when they were showing case, what they have, they trained and all those things, scientists and blah, 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 blah. And just confronted those that come from Limpopo. You know, I slapped hands because there were a lot of them. But just say to, where are you now, private sector? Where are you now? So this department which every now complain about capacity, people with capacity, they are being thrown outside the window. So what is it that should be done by yourself, DG? So you are active, but I hope that when your DG comes back, you'll give the information after or before you meet us again. Because one would want to check. You know, when you invite the chair in your event, by the way, I'm doing oversight. I'm not just coming to eat pap and meat. So I want to know that all those lists that you have produced and made me to congratulate them, where are you going to? What is it that you are doing with those people, those young graduates? So let's, because even this intern, maybe we should even, as we're going to deal with the structure, you must bring the report and ask your provinces, all those interns that are qualifying in this sector, and tell us where are they now, what is it that they do, as we're going to deal with the structure. So I think that's something that we would want to deal. As we are going to deal with annual report, we must move towards having a department that is solid. But I'm very worried, Eugene, around
You know, if that food security program three. You know, I'm confusing this program. I'm very worried in terms of the progress around that department. Because mostly people, there are people is acting, the other one, at some point it was trying to stabilize, was mania, now gone, acting. I don't know what's the problem. And the intervention must be made in that program. We want programs. We can't have what Honorable Maloyi was saying as a report, honestly, from the National Department. That actually can come from interim local government because they are still learning to govern. The interim, not the after 20 years of democracy. That actually, if it was a question of passing or getting a mark, you're going to get zero each on this, on that one, the answer that you provided on that. The issues of forestry, which is will come before, probably before we even deal with annual report. Those that responsibility of the department, you can see you're doing very well, but the question is, are you planting, and what are about the communities around those areas? And I think one of the things that we have to deal with is the report of the council, forestry council, in terms of the transformation agenda and those trusts, what do you call them? The trust organization that that you have in terms of transformation, because we've been focusing on mainly on caste issues, because we're a department of caste, not dealing with the issue of the sector mainly. Mostly when we deal with issues, we're not dealing with the issues affecting the sector. Generally, you still have farm workers being transported with trucks. You still have killings in farms, and both farm workers and farms. And we're being absorbed by these caste things instead of dealing with those pertinent issues that affect the sector. And we can only move out of that if department can help us to manage the little resources that you have properly. And it will assist this committee to focus in the real agenda of what we must oversight. We must oversight on the sector, not on the cast. We talked about cast for 4 years, and we are not getting there. And we should go there as soon as possible, because those that must take over, they must get the work. We've done a better work than we are now. So this report, in terms of the target, yes, Honorable Mapanga congratulated you. But if we're going to look at the impact, can we be very proud that we've achieved the target in terms of the impact? Because that is what we said we have to move towards. And the department is dragging the feet. We are not reaching that end result, because, you know, the outcome-based system or planning, it's been developed 5 years, 10 years now, but we are refusing to go to that. It's like Treasury talking about zero budgeting, but they are still talking about doing something else. So even government pronounced the outcome-based, which the outcome-based means that the end result of the program. But can we say that we've done very well in terms of the end result programs of this department?
because that's what will be evaluated as we conclude in 2019. So we're left with only 12 months to go into that area. So as we're going to deal with the structure, and fitness, we're going to write that letter properly, what we need. It should include the bonuses, because we must get whether people are getting bonuses without them doing the job and all those things. I think we must get that. So, DG?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. I think it is true in terms of looking at the current levels in terms of the concerns that were raised by the Honorable Members that while we take good lessons in terms of the pluses that we have, there are minuses that we should also learn from. And we would then also accept that within the minuses that we are having, there are issues around organizational realities that we are currently dealing with that honorable members would be aware of. Taking into consideration, firstly, the issue around the 450 commercial farmers, that as we introduced the issue, we indicated that there were already guidelines that the provinces were implementing, and that there was a top slicing of 220 million that the provinces have been allowed to deal with the commercialization. The new commercialization strategy was based on now coming to deal with all aspects of commercialization and to ensure that it's in line with what current best practice in government is from that perspective. But that lesson in terms of the planning part, Honorable Maloy, we really accept that level of guidance that was given. The second one was the issue on the internal audit on slide 48, where we had indicated there were recommendations that were done. Now, in terms of the current governance mechanisms, the internal audit would be taken to be an independent measure that advises the department. And therefore, that kind of recommendation is to the management of the department in terms of what needs to be implemented. It was not by any means meant for the committee to say that there's a recommendation that the department is giving out to the honorable members here. It's for the management of the department in terms of what needs to happen and ensuring that there's that independence in terms of looking at the audit within the department. On slide 40, on the distribution of fodder, I had indicated during the presentation that the two areas where they were still in progress, it was as at the 31st of March 2017, as the report, the fourth quarterly report, would have ended on the 31st of March 2017. At this moment, there is no distribution that is currently happening. And that links with what Madam Steyn had raised to say that animals are dying in line with the current arrangements that we're having. And I wouldn't be in a position to indicate that the department is not concerned about this. We have been in constant consultation with all the provinces that are involved to say that do we have declarations that are going from your side in terms of the current measures that are there, both from the Northern Cape point of view, from the Eastern Cape, and from the Western Cape, constantly asking about the declarations of these areas as drought areas so that we can be able to do what is supposed to be done. On slide 41, we would like to indicate that, yes, we will then have to tease out the issues that have been raised. We find that to be a plausible indication from our side to say that if we have got to have plans, they need to be smart, time-bound, and clearly spelled out. But what we are currently having was, where are the areas that we need to be concentrating, tease them out in terms of then having action plans that would deal with the specific areas. Those action plans will be outlined. Now, Honorable Stein raises quite concerning area, and I would speak on behalf of all the people who work within the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, that we are also moved in terms of the current discussions that are there, whether on plus farms, how they have got to be financed. And we have engaged with the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform to say that we need to be looking at the decision that was taken just to stop a recap and the implication that it has on the farming community on a broad term, Honorable Stay. To say just to stop it while there is no transitional arrangements is going to plunge the department, is going to plunge the country into a big abyss. And we are looking at how this can be resolved, because it will never help. The sector is as important to us as it is to all the stakeholders, that it sustains in the long run. So we are engaging rural development on that decision that was taken, which is a decision that was unfortunate in terms of not having the transitional arrangements per se. I would like Dr. Rampedi then to respond to the issues around the drought relief on the fences, really on the boreholes issue, on how we will have to deal with this. Honorable Chair, on the 30% set aside, the matter is being presented tomorrow to the cluster as given instruction. So that presentation would be made and would then find a clear articulation in terms of what needs to be done, as the responsibility of the 30% set aside was being driven by the Department of Trade and Industry, but there were inputs that were sourced from all the other departments. I'm very sorry, I said to the cluster, to Cabinet Lokgotla, honorable members. The issue on the drought being part of a broader climate change plan, both dealing with mitigation and also has been captured, because during the very same period we came up with a climate change plan, which is encapsulated in the report that we have given. And in this financial year, there are two deliverables within the branch Forestry and National Resource Management that will deal with climate change and also climate smart agriculture. And I think Dr. Rampedi can just touch base on those elements that we are dealing with. And of course, we admit, Chair, in terms of the measures to prevent the introduction of diseases, that is why there was a rational way of the department saying that for this year, in terms of our budget options, when we go to Treasury, we will focus on just ensuring that we deal with the issue around the prevention of the introduction of diseases. That is also captured in the audit report from our audit committee. On the issues of the graduates, I think we would need to have a response that comes from the branch that deals with the absorption of graduates within the Department of Agriculture. And I would like Ndate Msomi just to also articulate what are the current programs and how are we doing this, because there are plans that are in place just to deal with this. Some of the plans also encapsulate how we deal with the different policies, the comprehensive plan and other areas. And we admit also, Chair, that one of the things that we need to discuss is the structure of the department, because one would need to have a structure that is meant to deliver in terms of what the needs are, because the strategy would always need to inform what the structure would look like. And after our discussion with our principals, we will gladly also bring this here. We also take note of to say, while we're busy with the policy, we should be advancing on the action plans that would, in the meantime, be assisting while the policy is being crafted. I will then give over to my two colleagues, Dr. Rampedi and Ndate Msomi, just to deal with the two aspects that I have left out, Chair. Thank you.
Chairperson, honorable members, I will be commenting on the issues that were raised by the acting DG. The first issue relates to the details around the concerns that are raised on the boreholes and fencing. From the department side, we would request that the committee provides us with more details for us to be able to respond accordingly. We will have to consult with our colleagues in the provinces, because right here and now, Chairperson, it will be a challenge to try and respond as adequately as expected. The second issue, Chairperson and honorable members, has to do with the climate change plan. In the past, the committee has already guided the department that when we develop the plan, it has to be a plan that is comprehensive. It has to be a plan that takes into cognizance all matters that are related to adaptation and mitigation for the benefit of productivity of the sector. So for today, Chairperson, once more, we'll accept what has been said, and we are working on the plan, and we trust that very soon we'll be able to present it to the committee. Acting DG, thank you.
Thank you, Acting DG and Honorable Chairperson and members, honorable members. On the graduates, I think we fully agree with the Chairperson and members that this is still a challenge in terms of how do we absorb our graduates. We do have an intention program which is based on a particular percentage where we take in terms of the DPSA prescript, we take them on for a year. Some we put them in the department, others we send them to the industry, others we put them on farm. I think in the quarter four report, I think we said we've had about 30 of them. But going forward, the minister has directed us that we must have a graduate placement program and put graduates on commercial farms and then pay them a stipend and create a learnership that will allow them that when they graduate at a particular period, they can take advantage of the smallholder farms that are being put aside, because 50% of the plus farms would be divided to small holdings. So we are trying to work on this program. And this is one of the programs that we submitted on the radical socio-economic transformation that will be presented to the cabinet tomorrow. Once that, if it is approved, then we'll go to a full project of scale, then we'll share it with the committee on that one, on the modalities, how many of those we will go for. But to make it radical, we're really looking for good numbers. On our database now, which we keep in DAF, we've got about 2,000 unemployed graduates. That's reserved with diplomas and degrees. The one element that we're looking at is to make sure that we speak to our HR, that our interns, once they finish with us, they are the ones that actually get available posts on the entry levels. But I can on the second one, on the comprehensive producer development support, I can attest that I'm responsible for the drafting team that is responsible drafting that particular policy. We are now almost finished with it. I cannot maybe I heard the chairperson saying that it must be comprehensive enough, it must be a system that supports the farmer holistically as a producer. We will share this with the committee. I think we are ready just to share with the minister and bring it to the committee. The target is that as a policy, it will need to go to cabinet, but we would love to share it with the committee. So an invitation, we would love to come and share what we have done. And then the committee can be able to assist us on some other measures. But one element to try and have this holistic approach was to make sure that the threshold, the exit strategies built in, and then that their business plan, which will actually encapsulate the whole element, how do we support a particular individual. It has got different categories for all the farmers. So we'd really like to share this with the committee. As the chairperson says, it's a comprehensive procurement support. We have moved it from finishing next year. We have committed that we are going to put, and it's there in our APP plans that it will be finished this year. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair.
That was the response, Honourable Members. Honourable Maloy.
No, I just want to make a comment, Chair, and I won't be speaking till tomorrow. I'm told that you are coming back tomorrow. Chair, the comment is that, you know, the cut and paste with me doesn't work, and I don't like it. In the earlier presentation on the bed flu, I did indicate that from slide 1 to slide number 9, it's a repetition of the presentation that you gave to us in June. And after that meeting, I did indicate to yourselves that you must update us, give us an update, not a repetition. Now, I'm worried with the answer provided by the acting DG. You know, there are two people that I speak to regularly. Is the suspended DG and the now acting DG, telephonically. I do speak to them and raise my frustrations about the manner in which we do things in this department. Now, the acting DG says to us, as it relates to the distribution, that report is as at the 31st of March. That's what he says. The DG says to us, as it relates to commercialization of black farmers, there are other things that have been done by provinces and so on and so forth. This is an update. Now, the problem I have is that it means the information that is provided to us here is outdated. So I'm going to appeal to the department that if you prepare a report in March and you come and present to a portfolio committee in September or December, just update your report. Because when we pose questions, when we interact with your documents, we interact with what you have provided to us, not with what is on your mind, with what is written here. So just update your documents in order for us to be able to engage with yourselves. Otherwise, you are going to have doubts about the documents that you are presenting before us. Thanks, Chair.
Any other things before we close? Honorable Matal, who you want to...
I have nothing to say except to appeal to Ntate Rama's suit. Try to do things differently. There must not be the same complaint of yesterday today. And you have a team that has the capacity to do that. And I think, you know, as I once said while we were talking to Mpumalang, before you came here, you thoroughly prepared yourself and look yourself in the mirror and said, now I'm ready to go and present myself. And you come here and present what you are presenting, really. But just, you know, recover one China, please come and show us that you can do things better. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Members. Thank you, DG and the team. I hope the issues that we have raised in the next presentation, in the next interaction, should not come, as Honorable Matali said. So, but you see, the advantage is that we said we must bring the DDGs precisely because DG is a strategic leader of the department, but DGs are the main people in the program, with the program, and therefore on daily basis they must make sure that their programs are implemented and make impact in the life, changing life of the people. So these issues of graduates, 2,000 graduates, and we're still graduates, we're still changing others without the proper plan. I think we're creating what we because they will revolt against the state. Because you have created us, now you're telling us that there is no jobs. So My proposal to you, department, identify as Mpumalanga District, identify state land and get whatever incubator or mentors, whatever term you use, and take this graduate to go and make practical work, and so that they can must teach them to be entrepreneurs, now to produce, not to look to be a worker of somebody else. Let's ask the provinces to identify all the state lands, and then where there is opportunity, empty space, and there is a lot of empty space. We are complaining when people go and occupy those lands without proper allocation. Let's take these graduates to those lands and make them to produce the food. Now, not tomorrow, now. So what we need is just to identify the land, and within your cast, because you are responsible, cut that money in terms of where people come from, those graduates come from. If Limpopo has got 20, you put them into those farms that you have, and cut the cast and support them. It can work this way. So please stop theorizing, implement, because the only people who are theorizing is people at universities. Yes, us is to implement. Because if you want to compete with them, then we are wrong. We are at the wrong environment. Because they must produce a theory and we must practicalize. And Dr. Rampedi, you have not spoken about those people around those areas of where we own the plantation as government on the forest. And as we rehabilitate, but they are claiming, there is a claim, they've put claim against their lands. How do you interact with them? Do we have, we just continue to, because at some point there was a report that there is a report, the report that comes from the Eastern Cape of the people who have not been promised to be put to, who have department promised to build accommodation for them, and they have not, in one plantation, is Eastern Cape. So one of the things that we need to get is that because most of the plantation that you have, we in Vembe, is it Vembe? There was one area where we went, where we were told that the CPA said this, the land belongs to us, and department continued to with the plantation without talking to us, and we're still waiting. We now 15 years. At the time, there were 15 years waiting because the minister has pronounced in this budget speech of rural development that is going to give title deed to them. They are waiting for 15 years. Yes. And which is Limpopo, which means that it's like government is refusing to give people land or to plan with them, because if people, they had to wait for title deed for 15 years, and it was before, at some point there was the issue that the deed office has banned, so that the title deed was disappeared. You know, the interesting story of land. So, but I thought government will have another mechanism. Just to go and say this is your acknowledge, because for the fact that you've acknowledged that it's people's land, you will then go and plan with them, whatever you do. Actually, if you have planted the trees, that because you said one tree takes 30 years, 15 years back, now it was going to be in the halfway towards harvesting. and they are going to make money and be happy. So, but I'm not sure whether those issues have been addressed. I'm trying to emphasize what you are raising, Honorable Matali, to say, can we do things differently? And pick up issues that have been raised. We're not raising for the sake of raising them. We're saying, department, look at these issues and attend to them so that at the time we go back to Eastern Cape, we should find that those people, they've got accommodation because they've promised that we're going to give them accommodation or give them their land, because I don't understand where we have a problem. If government is the holder of the title deed on behalf of the people, why are we not planning with them? Because if just to produce a paper is a difficult, but just to make sure that they feel that they are part of the planning of their land is very important and critical. So I think those things will be attended as we're going to deal with annual report, because we're going to consolidate everything. We just need to have those answers and how best we are planning for the next year. You know, the way I'm so frustrated, you know, I get tempted even to come to your planning, strategic planning, and just to come and listen. But when these people, they say they are retreating and planning, what is it that they do? I must just go there and just to see, because it's a problem. But thank you very much. I think we are raising this concern, not that you are not doing anything. At least there is something that has been done, DG. And we hope you will do much more better, because your work must be visible to the people that you service than us here. If we meet people complaining about the service, even if you come and present a nice report here, it won't help. Let's make sure that the work that we do impress those that we serve. See, now we are just monitors. We are monitoring on behalf of them. But they must actually justify that indeed we get better things from the internet. Thank you very much. You are released. Honorable Mwari, sit down. Wear your jacket. Yeah? And honorable members, the last bus is at 6 o'clock. Now it's 6:15. Members, you're released to go so that you can get the bus. Honorable members of
Thank you. Thank you.